I didn't plan it that we'd end up learning the sugya matzah shmura this week. I guess it really, no, I really, really did it. It really worked out perfectly. It happens to be a toast to Masech HaSukkah, Daf Tesef and Aleph. Okay, so let's begin the sugya. So what we've been talking about is a sugya of Sukkah Yishana, the old sukkah, the sukkah that wasn't built for the purpose of Lishma. So we basically presented the Machlokes B'Sham B'Hillel. Is there a din of the Shema altogether when it comes to the building of the Sukkah? So according to B'Sham, it was a din min HaTorah derived from Sukkim L'cha. And B'Hillel said they never heard of such, no such din min HaTorah. Maybe with the Rabbana and Chiddush Davar, things that we spoke a little bit about in the past. But on love of Deraisa, there wouldn't be a requirement of building a Sukkah L'Shema. So it's in that context that Tosis quotes a Rishalmi, where in the first of the Ramakam, Tosis in Sukkah Daf Tesef and Aleph quotes Rishalmi that says, U'basa hachi Isa Hasam. After the sugya of a sukkah yeshan, of an old sukkah that wasn't made lishma, the Rishami then presents the issue of matzah yeshan. What would the sibla be, din be, or maybe not sibla din be, concerning old matzah? And that doesn't mean old matzah, stale matzah. It means matzah that presumably wasn't made for the purpose of the Pesach. So I didn't bake the matzah as l'shem, the mitzvah of matzah. Can I use that matzah or not? So the Gemara says, pluksa de Rishami beis Hillel. So it sounds like, at least from the beginning of the Rishami, that would be the same issue. That according to Beis Shammai, who insist on a sukkah being done l'shma, so to the matzah has to be made l'shma as well. Whereas according to Beis Hillel, who deny the din of l'shma by sukkah, they presumably would deny the din of l'shma by matzah as well. Now even just that original statement, that initial statement of Shammai, is somewhat difficult for us to understand, because the issue, whether or not you need l'shma by sukkah, is really a unique din of sukkah. There's no general global question, do mitzvahs need preparation l'shma? Certain mitzvahs for sure. Sefer Torah, Tefillin, do. Tzitzis does. Get does. Certain making a shofar doesn't. Cutting the loaf of a tree doesn't. I mean, l'chor, each mitzvah has to be judged by its own merits. So for the Gemara and the Rishami, just to say that, well, it's the same issue. Whatever Rishami said by sukkah is the same as they said by matzah, and the same as Basilah said by sukkah, said by matzah. It's all kind of hard for us to understand. But at least that's how the sugya started, that it's the same issue. Then the Gemara says, Amar, it's not called the Rishis, Amar Rebbe, I'm not sure who it is, Divrei HaKolu. They know that one could argue that by matzah, everybody agrees that it has to be made properly for the purpose of Pesach. Why is that? V'kevan shelo asol l'shem Pesach, davabari hu shelo dikdek ba. That if the matzah wasn't made for the purpose of the Pesach, that we can be certain that the person wasn't careful with the baking of the matzah. So what does that mean, he wasn't careful with the matzahs? So it sounds like the Gemara is throwing a curveball at us. There's a whole other reason why you have to bake matzahs l'shem Pesach. Not because of l'shma, because of chametz. Shal dikdik what means that you're not going to be careful if I know that I'm eating Ganiti's matzah at the Seder in 6 months from now, I'm having in mind the shame, the Seder, so then I can be very careful to make them kosher Pesach. But if I'm making matzahs in the middle of January and I'm not particularly planning on eating them for the Seder, so I'll make them what we call chametz tikka matzah. I won't be so careful with the dough. And therefore, you can't use such matzahs. So it comes out from the Rishami, there are almost two different aspects of matzah yeshana that are being presented. The first is the general question of lishma, which is a sukkah, tzitzis, sefer Torah, tefillin, mezuzah, kind of a shayla. And then the Rishami backpedals a little bit and says, no, even if you argue that there's no din of lishma in the terms of lishma of mitzvah and with the sukkah, but maybe there's another factor here, a tangential factor, namely that it has to be made for Pesach purposes, otherwise you're going to run into chametz problems. So within these one and a half lines of the Rishami, we're getting two very, very different vibes as to why we should or should not require matzahs to be made specifically for Pesach. Is it a part of the sugya of Lishma, or is it more of an issue, more of a, almost a tangential issue, a practical consideration in terms of chametz? So this is what it says in the Rishami. Now, we always know that we take what it says in Shalmi very seriously, but we very often want to check and see, well, what does the Bavli have to say? Is the Bavli saying something similar to the Rishami? Is the Bavli arguing the Rishami? So we take a look at Maseches Pesachim in the second of the Maamar Kamos in the Bavli, and the Gemara also talks about guarding matzahs, about shmur matzah. The first term, shmur matzah, of course, appears in the Chumash itself, shmatzahs and matzahs. And the Gemara discusses that requirement of shmatzahs and matzahs in the following context. Amar Rava, mitzvah lilsos, shenemu shmatzahs and matzahs, ilo debay lasisa shimu labai. The Gemara is discussing about different processes that are done along the way of preparing the grain for Shmur Matzah. First thing that has to be done, obviously, is you have to harvest the grain. And then at some later point, you have to grind it down. At a later point, you have to mix it with water and knead it and make it, etc. So there's another process in the middle, Lilsos, Lusisa, where they would almost like wash off the grain a little bit. It was already harvested. It would already be exposed to water. And Rava tells us that you have to do that. That's an integral part of the process of preparing the matzahs, of doing lasisa. Why is that? Because Rava says, if you don't do this process of lasisa, so then shimul amai. So then, what was the shemat of the matzahs that the Torah is talking about? The Torah says, be very, very careful. Make sure that the matzahs are totally guarded, completely guarded, and make sure nothing happens chametz. So Rava says, what am I watching for exactly? If there's no water here, so then there's nothing to worry about. So therefore, it's built into the system. It must be that the Torah is telling me that I should be careful to guard the matzahs. It must be that I'm doing something that could potentially be have a necessity for guarding the matzahs. So the Gemara says, really? The Gemara says, maybe what the Torah is saying is that when you put water in and you start to knead the dough, then you have to be careful. Who says you have to do something pre the stage of kneading? So Gemara says, no, shimu lamai, e shimu delisha, shimu delisha lav shimuhu. At least at this stage of the Gemara says, just the mere guarding of the dough at the time of lisha, that wouldn't be an acceptable type of a lisha, that wouldn't suffice for the mitzvah of Ushmat Mezamatzos. Therefore, it's understood there must be something that's even earlier on in the process. And the Gemara goes back and forth and back and forth and says, is that true? Maybe that is the process. Maybe that is the shiva that the Torah is talking about. So the Gemara is pilpling back and forth and back and forth. What exactly is the line of Dibakar? When does the Torah want us to guard the matzahs? Obviously, when the matzahs are still connected to the ground, we're not watching them for anything. That's not the midst of Shemira. Obviously, once they're already baked, they're in the boxes, that's not Shemur. We want to make sure nothing happened to the matzahs, but that's not Shemur matzah. So it's somewhere along the way of the process that Shemur is required. And the Gemara is having trouble pinpointing exactly what that point is. Finally, the Gemara says that it's two lines at the end of that Marmok, the seventh Marmok, it's two lines from the bottom, that the Amaluhu Lahanol de Mahavchi Kifi, that Rava said to the people who are questioning exactly what process that is, but it's very, very early on, and according to many, it corresponds to Ktsira, that's the Mamash at the time of the harvesting itself, Ki Mahavchisu Hafichu L'Shumatza, the very, very harvesting of the grain should already be done for the Shum Mitzvah, I'm sorry, Amlokasav Hashimim Eikar Mitchilas V'Atzofa B'inan, And that when the Torah says Ushmat Mezamatzos, it has to be from the very, very beginning. There is no one point of demarcation, but it has to be Mishask Tzira all the way to the time of the baking of the matzahs. That's what's called Shemura. So that's a win knowing today. This machlokes is to be shown whether that's really, really the Maskanas of Gemara, or whether that was just a Midas Chasidus at the very end. But that's a paskin. We try very hard to have what we call Shemura Matzah, and we define Shemura Matzah, Shemura Mishask Tzira. That's what it says in the box. Shmur Mishas Katsira Ad Shasafi, until after it's baked already. That whole process is considered to be the time of Shmur.
Rabbi, I thought Shmur was to keep it away from water.
Okay, oh, wait a second. We're going to see in a second. So the question is, the Gemara is talking about Shmura, and we're almost adding water to almost create a problem and then watch it. It means Shmur doesn't, at least in one stage of the Gemara, Shmur doesn't mean that there's no water there, because at the end of the day, you have to eventually put water there. There's no question you have to put water there at the time of kneading, otherwise it's going to be very hard to bake matzahs. So there's going to be water there. So clearly the Torah is saying that even though there's something that could potentially go wrong, be absolutely extra, especially careful, that nothing goes wrong, that it remains a shmura. But what's not clear for the Gemara is, what is your mindset? What exactly are you watching? What is the goal of shmura matzah? So in the Rishami, we already saw two different possibilities. At first, the Yishami discussed the issue of making the matzah, preparing the matzah, for a certain lishma type of a mindset. The idea of, it's almost like building a sukkah according to Yishami. It's like making tzitzis for us. It's like writing a sefer Torah to all the mezuzahs for us. It's like writing a ger. We saw that the Yishami was emphasizing the idea of lishma. And then Yishami backpedaled and started to talk more about shelo diktikba, which is more of an issue of chimutz. That the preparation, the shmura that the halacha requires, ushmat besematzah pasuk parshas bo, ushmat besematzah, is not focusing on almost like a positive shmira. It's not saying to create the cheftza for matzah, you require a baking of the matzah or making of the matzah or harvesting of the grain. Lishma, that's not what the Torah is talking about. What the Torah is talking about, shelo diktikba, just to make sure that nothing went wrong, to make sure that even though there's water there, make sure that nothing terrible happened. So here, if you read the Bavli, it's not clear what the Bavli is saying. The Bavli is talking about Ushmartem. There's no questions about Ushmartem. The Bavli is not quite sure at what point precisely does the mitzvah of Shmura kick in. Is it at the earlier stage of Ktzira? Is it a little bit of a later stage of Elisha? Maybe there's some other stage in the middle. It's not clear when you're watching it, but it's not even clear what you're watching. It's not clear when the person is harvesting the dough. Is he doing it Hinini Mucham Zum L'Shei Mitzvah? When he's kneading the dough, is he doing Hinini Mucham L'Shei Mitzvah? When he's putting it into the oven, he's doing Hinini Mucham L'Shei Mitzvah? Well, there's no L'Shei Mitzvah over here. He's just looking around and making sure there's no water here, everyone's hands are clean, there's nothing is going wrong, nothing chametz is happening, but there's no asiyas hacheftz of the matzah of the Shema. So the Yerushalmi had both aspects, and it's not clear what the Bavli is talking about. So if we go to other sugyas in Shas, we look at the Rishonim, so we see that it appears to be a major, major machlokes in the Rishonim, just what is the goal? What are you trying to accomplish with the word Shmura? So we've already picked up the Chumra D'Kashita, Mat Shmura Mishas Ktzira. We're already willing to pay those extra couple of dollars, more than a few extra dollars, for the Shmura Mishas Ktzira. But we want to understand what we're watching for. What are we paying for? What are you actually getting money's worth? So are you paying for somebody to say, Hinini Mucharim Zum L'Shai Matzah Mitzvah? Or are you just paying for somebody to look around and make sure that no water at any wrong time comes into contact and we don't end up with a problem of chametz? So we take a look at the third of the Mamakamos. So the Gemara said it's Gittin Dafyunam and Aleph, quotes a Braisa about the Sanya Matzas Kusi, matz that was baked by the Kusim. And the Kusim were a very, very strange group of people. They still are floating around Eretz Yisrael today. They were originally brought to Eretz Yisrael a little bit before Churban Bayis Rishon, so they've been around quite some time. They were Goyim. They started out, obviously, as Goyim. They were brought to Eretz Yisrael in the days of Sancheirov, and Sancheirov sent the Seres HaShvatim, sent the Ten Shvatim into Golos. So the custom in the ancient world was when you sent a nation out of their land, so you don't want the land to remain uninhabited, so you brought another nation in. You conquered one nation and brought it to this land, and you conquered that nation and threw them to the other land. The idea was that nobody should get too attached to the land, so that way everyone would remain servants of the conqueror. So he brought people from the place called Kuta into Eretz Yisrael, to the northern part of Eretz Yisrael. The problem was they were mamash idol worshippers, the Kusim, and they came to Eretz Yisrael to continue to worship their idols. The other thing is, the Pesukim and Sefer Malachim describe that in Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't tolerate the Avodah like he did a little bit more in Kuta. So all of a sudden, these people started to get eaten up by lions. So they found some Jews still around, and they asked them what was going on. So the Jews told them that they better stop worshipping idols, that they want to be able to remain in Eretz Yisrael, they better start to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So slowly but surely they converted, they became Jewish. The problem was that their conversion was not 100% sincere, and it was never really clear whether they had really halachically became Jews or not. Again, this was talking about in the end of Bayis Rishon, and they were still floating around in the days of the Mishnah, they're still, their descendants are still floating around today. So they, by the days of the Tanoim, it was very unclear what their status was. Was the Geirus ever really done properly? Was it ever done sincerely? Was it not done sincerely? There was Machlokes of Tanoim. The Gemara used the phrase, whether the Kusim are Geiri Arayasem or Geiri Emesem. Were they only Geirim because the lions were eating them up, but they never really were sincere, and therefore the whole Geirus was questionable? Or do I say no? That in the end of the day, they really did convert. In the end of the day, they were Geiri Emes. So they had different opinions in the Tanoim for hundreds of years, whether they were considered to be Jewish or not. Finally, the Gemara tells us at the beginning of Maseches Chulin, that in the days of the early Amoraim, it was an Ibn Vagom where they already came to the conclusion that the whole thing was just a sham. The whole thing, they were not sincere. And Chazal declared that the whole Geirus was batal, and at the end of the day, they're not really considered to be Jewish. And that's been the Psak for the last 1,800 years. We still have them. They're still floating around in the area near Shechem, near Hagrizim. They still have a lot of strange practices. They still bring Korban Pesach these days, but on Hagrizim. So that's a little bit strange. We've seen them on some of the NCSY trips. I don't know if you were with us a couple of years ago. We went to go visit that whole area, so we saw them. It's a very strange thing. They don't bring Korban Pesach on Erev Pesach because they don't accept the Jewish calendar. So they have their own calendar. So they bring their own carbon in their own place on their own day. So it's a big tourist attraction. It's a lot of people like to go watch. They bring in the Korban Pesach. So I always thought it was very strange that we're going to go watch a bunch of goyim bring what they're calling a Korban Pesach in a place that's not the Beis Hamikdash on a day that's not Erev Pesach. That we don't even know what they believe in. We're not even sure what gods they're worshiping. So I thought it's a very rather bizarre tourist attraction. But people do go. So I don't know if anyone ever seen them. Have you made it to the Korban Pesach? I don't know.
I've been there, but not on Pesach.
No, not on Pesach. Okay. Anyway, whatever it is. So I was very excited because it's a famous sugya in the Gemara that al kech yayim ben akusim. If a person buys wine from the kusim, a whole sugya about trumas and maisers, etc. So when we were on the trip a couple of years ago from Mentis Wakolol, so I saw when we were driving past their towns, so I saw there was a big sign that had a wine store. It said al nachlo mochum yayim post. I got all excited. I said that al kech yayim ben akusim. We can always put the salacha. We did not stop the bus and try to find out. Anyway, the Maaseh Shulte, they're not considered to be Jewish. I think in the state of Israel, I think they're registered as their own nationality or something. They're not considered to be. They don't consider themselves to be Jewish, and we don't consider themselves to be Jewish. Anyway, but in the old days, when there were still those opinions that maintained that they were Jewish, so the Tanoim discussed within those views that maintained that they were Jewish, the Tanoim discussed how does that impact on us. So what if a Kusi bakes matzahs for us? Or what if a Kusi writes a get for us? Or what if a Kusi does X, Y, and Z for us? So how do we deal with it? So to make the situation of the Kusim even more complicated is that even according to those opinions that at least at one time they were Jewish, they weren't very observant. Well, it depends what you mean by that. They weren't completely observant, but they were quasi-observant. I mean, some mitzvahs they were very into, and other mitzvahs they weren't so into. The mitzvahs that they were into, they were really, really into. They were very, very meticulous about. The problem was that half the mitzvahs in the Torah, they weren't so careful. One of them eventually was Avodah Zarah. So the whole thing was very, they were a very, very shaky group of people. So the Braisa tells us in Daf Yudam and Aleph, the third of the Rambam covers the sign, we learned in the Braisa, Matzas Kusi Buteris. There's one opinion in Tanoim that maintains that matz that was baked by the Kusim would be all right. You could eat such matzah. Not only can you eat the matzah Pesach, but you can actually use it for the Seder as well. So it sounds from the Braisa that there are almost two statements, two chidushim. Number one, you can eat it. That sounds like you could take it on your Chol HaMoed trip on the third day of a Chol HaMoed. And number two, by golly, you could even use it for the mitzvah of Be'erev Tochel Matzahs. Now the obligation to eat matzah is of course only on the first night. When chutz lo'etz, of course, the first two nights. So the Brice is telling us a progression that not only is the matzah not chametz stick, not only is it mutter, but you can even use it for the mitzvah. So what is the significance of that progression? So Rashi explains in the fourth of the Rambam comes, Rashi getting daf yud. For other yotzevay dechavasa bepesach, says Rashi, b'shem chovas lail harishon, that one could use the matzah for the first night. Shuchayev lechol matzah b'shnemeres, because the halacha requires that for the mitzvah of matzah, you have to have matzah mishnemeres, matzah that was washed, matzah that's shmur matzah. Kiddich siv, be'erev tochlu matzahs, as it says in the Chumash, be'erev tochlu matzahs. So Rashi basically tells us, he told us this idea of matzah mishnemeres, something unique to the first night of Pesach. V'yafil yadina bad lo'ech mitzah. Even though we know it's not chametz, it's not a question. We can tell it's not chametz. Lo nafik ba elim ken avad l'shimur l'shem chavis matzah. So Rashi finally tells us what Shmura is. But we've been dancing around the topic, when is Shmura? Shmura from Tzira, Shmura from Lisha, Shmura from Leh. Rashi finally tells us, Tachas, what does the word Shmura mean? Rashi defines it in these four words, Shimur l'shem chavis matzah. How do you know that you have to have Shimur l'shma? D'chsev u'shmatem es ha-matzos. So Rashi is learning pshat in the three words, u'shmatem es ha-matzos, as a Shmura l'shma. Therefore, the whole sugim psachim daf mem, which was pupling about when Shmura starts, presumably, that Gemara is also talking about Shmura l'shma. Remember, we said that it wasn't clear in psachim daf mem what the Shmura mean. The Shmura mean an active, positive endowing with l'shma, or the Shmura just simply mean that make sure there's no chametz there. So Rashi finally tells us that it means more than just not chametz. It refers to an actual positive endowment of a l'shma. And then Rashi goes on to say, and ukusim bikinein, and the kusim, they're aware of this halacha, and they're careful about this halacha. They may not have kept all the other mitzvahs in the Torah, but this one they were good for. Shetzricha lishtam lishma, but also lishimur. The kusim know this din. The kusim also know to say l'shai matzahs mitzvah. They know the whole nine yards. They know how to make matzahs lishma as well. So basically, we go back now to the third of the Rambam Kamos. The Braisa was telling us two different halachas. First was telling us matzahs kusim buteres. First was telling us it's not chametz stick. So it's got a kusi hashkacha on it, tachas the batter or bottom of the kusim, you can eat it on Pesach, no problem. But Rashi's sensitive to the fact just because you can eat it on Pesach doesn't mean it's good for masa. There are a lot of things you can eat. I can eat non-gebracht cookies on Pesach also. I can't be a tzimatz with that. I can eat macaroons on Pesach. I can be yotzei matzah. A lot of things you can eat on Pesach that are not chametz. That doesn't mean you can be yotzei matzah. So that's the progression of the brisa. It's not chametz. So don't worry about the kusim. Know how to be careful in uchus chametz. And by the way, the kusim also know how to do lishma. And after all, lishma is necessary for latzeis yidech lasim on Pesach. And the source that lishma is necessary are the three magic words of shmatmas and matzahs. So at least according to Rashi, we understand, because we have to give a karsa tov even to the kusim, thanks to the sugi about the kusim, Rashi has clarified for us what the din of lishmat matzah is. It's basically a din of lishma. However, if one opens up the Rambam in Uchus Chametz Matzah, Perkei Halacha Ches and Tes, so the Rambam gives you a whole details about if something went wrong and you had grain and the grain may have possibly, there's an outside chance that maybe, possibly, it became chametz. So even though it's most probably not really chametz, so the Rambam writes that you can have a situation, it's in the second line in the middle of the Rambam, Halacha Ches, She'ena dogon she'nivlon is ba'ashavon is ba'keach chametz gomushot Torah. You can have something, it's grain that it hasn't mamish opened up, it hasn't completely fermented, it hasn't really turned into chametz, but it's already something shaky. We're leaving out the details, what has happened to that dough. It got a little bit wet, but it didn't really open up properly. And the Rambam writes, v'enu elam divrei sofim. The prohibition of eating those kinds of things are mid derabbanan. That's what the word divrei sofim, the pashtus, sounds like. Mishum shenema ushmat mesematos. Because the Torah says ushmat mesematos, and what does that mean? So the Rambam defines as what that pasuk in Chumash means. Klomar, he zoharu b'matza v'shimru osa mikol tzad chimutz. That's the Rambam's taich. The Rambam's translating the phrase ushmat mesematos. So Rashi, just a moment ago, the fourth in Ramakomas, also translated, in his Chumash had a different translation. In Rashi's Chumash, it says, Ushmat Mesematzos, Avi Lo Shibu L'Shem Chavis Matzah. According to the Ram, I didn't see a word, anything about the Shema. I didn't see anything about Chavis Matzah. I didn't even see anything about the first night, per se. I just saw a more general, global statement about making sure that the matzahs are not chametz. Shimru sa mikol tzad chimutz. Therefore, the Rambam Halacha Tes writes, lefikach amru chachamim. Now that lashon amru chachamim also sounds a little bit derabanan. Tzarech adam lizar bedagan, because of what I just told you, says the Rambam, namely shmarat v'samatzis, which meant klom lizar b'matzis shimus amikot tzad chimutz. Therefore, the Chacham have dictated to us, tzarech adam lizar bedagan she'ochav erim b'Pesach. One has to be very, very careful with any grain that one eats on Pesach. Now here we go back to what you thought shmur matzah is. The Rambam is defined, shalo yavol of mayim. Make sure there's no water here. The last thing we want is water. Shalo yavol of mayim achashen niktzar. The Rambam is taking the most strict approach of shmur matzah. It's got to be all the way back from the beginning of time of harvesting. Ad shalo yavo shum chimutz. To be absolutely certain and careful that there's no tzad chimutz whatsoever. So the Rambam told us a lot of things here. The Rambam almost toned down Shmur Matzah a little bit to make it only Durabbanan. It sounds almost like the Rambam is saying that a Shmur Matzah is all the requirements of Shmur Mishas Katsira, that whole picture is really only a Chumr Midurabbanan. That's what it sounds like. That's not literally what the Pasuk means. That's a question. But what's more critical for us is the way the Rambam is presenting to us the whole idea of Shmur Matzah, that Shmur Matzah, according to the Rambam, has nothing to do with Lishma. It has zero to lishma. It has everything to do with making sure that it's not chametz thing. So we seem to have two very, very different approaches here between Rashi and the Rambam. What are we doing? What are we paying for? Are we paying for Hashgacha that's telling us that we halakhically endowed the matzah with the kavanas lishma, like tzitzis and sefer Torah and tefillin, etc.? That's Rashi's version of shmur matzah. Or are we more in sync with the Rambam shmur matzah, that what shmur matzah is just to be really, 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 really careful, extra above and beyond the call of duty, to be careful that it didn't become chametz. But there is no din of lishma at all.
Rambam was quoting a pasuk, but he's saying it's only
the So there are two different ways of reading the Rambam. So there are those who say that the Rambam really means their eyes. Sometimes the Rambam does use the phrase divrei sofim to refer to things that are not explicit in the Chumash. It's almost like Toshima Peh, the Rambam sometimes also called divrei sofim. And sometimes the Rambam uses divrei sofim to mean pure derabanan. But the Rambam is almost saying that the Torah is not really telling us you mamish have to be careful about the extra careful chametz. The Torah is just saying, make sure the matzah doesn't become chametz. It's more like an asmach. That's more what the Torah is saying. Just be careful Pesach time. Shmar to Mitzvah Matzos. The nuances, the details, I got to go down to the fields in Nebraska and make sure that there's no grain, there's no water there from the moment of Ketira. All that is all chumras with the Rabbanim to fulfill the almost like global general statement of Shmar to Mitzvah Matzos. It's not clear to what degree the Rabbanim would say what it says in your box of matz that you're paying this extra $10 for that says Shmar to Shmur Mishas Ketira. That stamp, is that necessary in the Torah? Is that necessary in the Rabbanim? It's unclear from the Lashon Rambam. But what seems to be very clear from at least from these two Rambams is that it has nothing to do with Lishma. The Rambam didn't say a word to do with Lishma. Not only did the Rambam not say Lishma, the Rambam left something else very important out. He left out the whole emphasis on the first night. The Rambam didn't say anything about the first night of Pesach being different than any other night. Rashi said that. Rashi, back on the fourth of the Rambam comes, Rashi says, B'chum mishum chofes layel harishon. Rashi spoke about Shmura being necessary only on the first night, but that makes a lot of sense. Because Rashi understood that the goal of Shmura is to make sure that it's made Lishma. Lishma is something that we need when we're doing a mitzvah. So Rashi says, rightfully so, that the mitzvah of matzah is only on the first night. So if the mitzvah of matzah on the first night, the Lishma only makes sense on the first night as well. What do you need Lishma for your trip to Six Flags on the third day Cholamon? But according to the Rambam, who's emphasizing that Lishma is not really, I'm sorry, that Shmur is not really Lishma. There's no kheftz of Lishma here that's being done. The Rambam is saying, make sure not to eat chametz. Make sure not to eat chametz. Well, I can't eat chametz on Pesach night. I can't eat chametz on third day Cholamon. I can't eat chametz on Shvisha Pesach also. So according to the Rambam, if the whole goal of Shmura is to prevent chimutz, it's a special extra above and beyond precautions to prevent chimutz, so then it doesn't really make any sense to insist on shmura on the first night any more than the rest of the week, which is exactly what the Rambam sounds like, because the Rambam never said anything. The Rambam never said a word about shmura being limited only to the first night. So that's what the Mefarshim and the Rambam point out, that according to the Rambam, the Pashat Dvarim is you have to have shmura the whole week. Whatever shmura is, whatever the requirement, the rice, whatever shmura is, there's no difference fundamentally between the Seder and any other day of Pesach. That's Pashas within Dasa Rambam. So this Chumra started to get very, very expensive, because shmura became Mishas Ketzira, like the Machabirim. And now, according to the Rambam, it's a lot more of a quantity of Shmur than we thought. According to Rashi, it's a very, very small amount. Because I just for the say that's all you need. Two star Mechutzah. You don't need all that much. But for according to the Rambam, Shmur is going to become much more significant for the duration of Pesach as well. The question is, based on the sources in Chazal that we saw, so who has the upper hand in terms of the Makoros? Rashi or the Rambam? So the Pashas Advarim is that the Yerushalmi sounded very much like the Rambam, because the Yerushalmi said, do you need Lishma by Matzah? So the Yerushalmi says, well, according to Beis Hillel, you don't. We pass like Beis Hillel, Sukkah doesn't need Lishma. So if Sukkah doesn't need Lishma, Matzah doesn't need Lishma. So the Yerushalmi said, no, you still have to be careful, make sure it's not Chometz. So when all the dust settled, it sounded from the Yerushalmi that the only din of Shmura is the Chometz part. The Lishma part we got rid of. The Lishma part is not relevant. The Lishma is only according to Beis Shammai. So the Pashas in the Yerushalmi sounds very much like the Rambam. As we've said already many times, that just because something sounds that way in the Yerushalmi, you still got to look to the Bavli. So we haven't yet seen the whole picture yet in the Bavli. Hopefully from tomorrow, we'll go continue on with some of the other comments that the Bavli has to put into perspective where this added din of Lishma, at least according to Rashi, comes from.